This episode is sponsored by JDAQA Software Testing, your scalable solution for manual, automated, security, and performance testing. Check us out at JDAQA.com. And with that, let's get on with the show.
This is The First Customer, hosted by Jay Agner.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the First Customer Podcast. Today, I'm a little hoarse, but that doesn't keep my excitement down for this incredible guest we have today, Greg Shepherd, just a man of a million talents and things. I could go through them, but we wouldn't even get into the end of it before I started the podcast. So let's just meet Greg. Greg, thank you so much for joining me today and welcome to the show, buddy.
Thank you very much. I appreciate you, Jay, having me.
Oh, you got it, brother. The CEO and founder of Startup Science. Why don't you just tell us, where did you start your journey and did that have any impact on you being an entrepreneur?
Yeah, so I have autism and dyslexia, synesthesia, and they call it savant syndrome. I don't like the name syndrome, but anyway. And so when I was little, I had a lot of problems with school and education and stuff like that. And my family didn't have very much money. We lived in East Oakland in the 80s, which was like, it's kind of like an active war zone at that time. And so there's foster and adopted kids in our family. So we were getting like beat up. So my mom, one time I got beat up really bad. And then my mom said, okay, that's it. And then we moved to Grass Valley, which is like in the mountains. And we bought a piece of property and we camped on our property in tents while we built our own house. Wow. And then we lived on the property like, and I raised animals and I sold them and I sold Rubik's cubes and I used to catch rattlesnakes and sell them. And
I heard that story. Did you dig into that a little bit? Was it a true story that you sold the venom or something? What did you do with that?
No, totally. Yeah. So what I would do is I would take a stick, a long green stick. And if you get a long green stick and you slice it down the center, it wants to close back where it was. So I put a little twig in between and it would hold it open. And then I could stand back and put it around the snake's neck and trap it like it would go in the dirt and not hurt the neck. And then the stick, little twig would break and snap, the thing closed and it would trap it. And then I could grab it behind the neck and throw it in a feed sack and take it to the back door of this pet store. It was like black market. And I didn't know. I was just a kid.
Right.
And they would take the venom out for anti-venom and they would clip the fangs and sell it as an exotic pet. Wow. I got $200 a snake, man. This is like in the 80s. This was good money for a kid.
Yeah. Did you ever get bit?
No. I mean, you know, you learn their behavior and they can leap about half their body length.
Right.
So you just look at them and you're like, okay, and you have a stick and you kind of distract them and then you kind of move around them and then you get behind them and then boom.
Wow.
And they wrap around the stick. So they like get pinned and then they immediately wrap around and start going nuts.
Right.
And then sometimes you don't even have to grab them. You just take the whole stick and throw it in your feed sack.
That is like the most incredible starting out entrepreneur story. So where did you go from there?
So then I would import Rubik's cubes. I would used to go to the swap meet and buy them. And then I ended up buying them by the case for that guy and sell them in school. And then my mom caught me with the rattlesnake thing because there were a bunch of underneath the house in a cage and she called the animal control, and then they were like, and then my mom knew it was me, and that was over. So then I started selling rats because the guy told me at the pet store that they would eat rats. So I got a female and a male, and I started breeding and selling rats to them instead of the snakes. And then I would, and during Christmas, I would go, my sister would climb up, or I would go climb up the trees and throw mistletoe down, and then my sister would put it in little sandwich bags. We put a bow around it, and I'd stand in front of the grocery store. Then as I got older, I tried to get jobs, but because I have level 5 dyslexia, it was really hard to do it. So I joined the Navy and then I got kicked out of the Navy for having asthma and lying about all these things. And then I had $133.77 and I started working 4 jobs and eventually I started my own. The first business I really started was a bungee jumping company.
And how did you start that? Why did you start a bungee jumping company?
Since I was 18, I take on things every year that I think are impossible. So, you know, like I wrestled a crocodile. Last year, I did a 30-day water fast. Before that, I swam a marathon. I did a base jump before that. I rode 500 miles on a bike before that, you know, since I was 18, with the idea that because life is so hard for me all the time, that I would, I would take on challenges that I thought were impossible to make me stronger and to give me confidence. And so I did that. And then I started 12 companies, sold all 12, 4 private equity awards for transactions between 250 and a billion. Because I sold one of my companies to, as part of a transaction to eBay. And then I became the chief strategy officer and then the chief technology officer to put it together. And then I left and then I went into politics. And then that's when I met Barack Obama a couple of times. And man, he is the coolest frigging guy you ever met. I mean, he is so cool.
That's on my bucket list to meet Obama.
Oh, man, he is so cool. Like, you can't even imagine. Like, you see him on TV and stuff and you think, oh, yeah, this guy's cool. But then when you meet him for real, I felt like he was like my friend. Like, I knew him and stuff. It was the most bizarre thing. And I was having like autism problems, a lot of ticking, which is where I'm like doing things. So the Secret Service was like, had to walk me over to him. And then it was really weird. I kind of screwed up the whole thing. And then the next time I met him, I had planned it all out and I walked up and I told the Secret Service right away that I had autism and that this is how it is. And then they walked me over and then Obama gave me a hug.
Oh, man. Wow.
Yeah. And yeah, he was so cool. But then I wasn't letting go of him. And so the Secret Service had to come and like peel me off of him.
I don't know if I would let go of him either. We share a birthday, Barack and I, August 4th.
Really?
Both were birthday pals. So I feel like I'm destined to meet him at some point in my life. So I'm very jealous of that story. Where did this?
I hope so.
I hope so, man. I don't want to get into politics to meet him though. I just want to like meet him at like the grocery
store. Yeah, he's just cool, man. Yeah. Whatever your politics are, the guy's like an amazing story.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it just felt like a better time in America. There was like hope and stuff. It was like a wild time when that whole thing was happening. I missed that. Where did all this come from? Is it from your mom kind of having that anything will, you know, we'll get through anything kind of mentality and like the way that she raised you? Like, where do you think you got this? Just like, because I meet a lot of people and they're surprised with some of the things from my story, which is like literally, you know, just a tiny little dot on the map of what awesome stuff you've done. But I just have never, like, I don't have that rollover mentality, right? I just never, there's never like not a way forward, right? And I feel like it's a similar trait with you. Where did you get that from?
Man, I think, well, when I was born, I had 9 blood transfusions. I died twice technically. And I spent a lot of time in the hospital because of issues that I had. And my mom said to me one time, she said that I was here for a reason and that I needed to fulfill that reason. My mom was a nun, by the way, and my dad was a priest. They met in the church and then they left and then started taking care of kids. They went into the church to try to take care of kids. The church didn't want them to take care of kids. So then they bailed and did it on their own. Mm-hmm. And so I think I have this insatiable appetite for achievement. And I don't know what the only thing I know is that because all the time in the day, you know, things are hard for me, you know, like reading is hard, like even reading a menu or like traveling through an airport is a freaking nightmare or like stuff like things are just hard, right? So I think if I maintain this high watermark of things being hard, then the normal things that are hard don't seem so hard anymore.
Mm-hmm. No, and I love on your website, I love the challenge. How you kind of just, you've had a yearly or, you know, a couple times a year, you have these challenges and it may be something I'd try to adopt in my life. I love that kind of just picking some audacious goal and just going for it. And what would be your favorite challenge that you've kind of risen to so far?
I categorize them into they're all things that I think are impossible. So, you know, so I could tell you like swimming a marathon was because I'm afraid of the water. That the reason why I'm afraid of the water is because I went cage diving with great whites while they ate seals, and that did a number on me. But this year I dove with sharks without a cage, and they just ignored me, and it was kind of cool. And I think that if I were to say, like, the most scary thing was the shark thing. The most bizarre thing was probably wrestling a crocodile or bullfighting. Like, the driving an IndyCar and a NASCAR, that was really fun. I have a ticket to space, which is going to be the height of everything, I'm pretty sure.
Wow. Was it on the blue horizon? Is it on the...
No, it's called worldvision.space. And okay. It's a big capsule that goes up in a giant balloon, and, you know, and then it falls to this. Yeah. So, but man, that's a good question. I mean, difficulty wise, I rode a bike 525 miles down the coast of California, 100 miles a day for a week. That was extremely difficult. And a marathon. Marathons are really hard too, really hard. But this year I did a 30-day fast where I only drank water for a month, and that was extremely difficult. I don't know. That's a really good question. I don't know. I don't know. I mean, I think after I do them, I'm always like, oh, that was the hardest one.
But right.
Then, you know, I do another one, I'm like, no, this one was the hardest one.
It's just such a cool way to make sure you're, like you said, living your life to the fullest, right? I mean, it's, I love the something you thought was impossible, or something that scared you, or something that, you know, you're just deathly afraid of, and kind of conquering it, which is, it's just, it is like the mindset. So let's get into the business stuff.
Cool. I like it.
Okay, I mean, let's do a ridiculous portfolio and backlog of just incredible things. You know, what was, you know, your first quote unquote real business, you know, after you got done milking snakes and, you know, doing all these other things you were doing, what would you consider your first kind of real business?
Like, I wouldn't count the bungee jumping. The first one was a bank, a non-depository bank. And the second one was an environmental applied biotechnology company. And then the third one was when the internet came out. And then I found my place.
Right.
And then I just went apeshit in internet stuff. I learned how to code. And then I started, like, that was like, because think about it, like with software, you can take vapor, just something that's in your head, and create a business that people are paying for out of nothing, right? Just some of your imagination. And for me, that was like the most amazing, and still is the most amazing thing that you could ever do. You know, it's magic.
It really is incredible. And I think it gets lost a lot of times how incredible it is to, like you said, take some ether and just like bottle it and then like repackage it and sell it to somebody else, and they pay you for something that you were thinking of that you made through code. Does the dyslexia come up when you're programming at all? Does that like impact the coding side of things?
I haven't coded for a long time, but when I was coding, yeah, it would. So basically coding is just like learning another language. It really is. Like, integers just mean things, just like letters and words mean things. And there's punctuation, and things don't sound right. They don't work right if you don't do the right punctuation. So I just sort of thought of it as, I used to, because I'm a nerd, so I used to think of it as like an alien language. And I was just like speaking alien.
I mean, it's not that far off. I mean, it is, we're talking to computers, so it's not that far off. So tell me about the eBay thing and like buying these businesses and selling these businesses. Like, you exited 12. I mean, people are lucky to sell one business in their lifetime. How the hell did you sell 12 businesses?
So I have this thing. I have this savant thing, and my special power, like, I don't know if you ever saw the movie Rain Man. So he's a autistic savant. 10% of autistics are savants, but only autistics are savants. And mine is patterns. So I can see patterns in everything. And that allows me to see opportunities and ways to make things function better and stuff. So, like, as an example, what I did after politics was I learned that 4% of people have the ability to get out from check-to-check living. And growing up that way myself, you know, I was like, holy shit, what is the ways they get out from check-to-check living? And then there was 98% of them do it through a windfall, which included lottery, by the way, which is insane. And then so the largest group out of that group, 78%, did it by starting a business. But then 90% of the people that try to start a business failed. So then what I did is I put 500 grand into a fund, and then I started a research project to find out how, when, and why founders fail. Because when I was a chairman for a congressional candidate, and during that time, politics were not, I couldn't do, you know, as long as they can lie and there's money in it, especially as long as they can lie, it's like, what are you going to do?
Right.
So then I said, okay, I'm going to help founders because that's what I'm good at. I just smoked a joint, went to the beach, and I was like, oh, I'm going to do what I'm really good at. Because I had studied all these operating systems and figured out had this algorithm of starting businesses. I got better and better. The last one sold in a year and a half, you know, the last one sold in 3 years, the one before that sold in a year and a half. And so I was like, okay, I'm going to teach people, I'm going to change and create opportunity equality, not wealth equality. That's a lagging indicator, opportunity equality for everybody by teaching them why founders fail. So I did this huge research project, and then I wrote a book about it. It gets published in September from Ben Bellick Publishing. Mm. It's called Startup Science, The Life Cycle, which is where I went through and explained to people the innovation life cycle, the startup life cycle, everything that happens, why people fail during it, all of the stuff that I studied to try to help. Then that turned into a school called Startup Science, where I started creating micro learning lessons that are like 8 minutes. And I gave it away free to universities, nonprofits, all the founders can go in free and take all these courses. And they specifically highlight in micro learning ways exactly what you need to know to start a business, which includes stuff like ideal customer profile, personas, you know, all the stuff that you do on your show. And in doing that, all these founders come in. And then Fulbright, I don't know if you know who Fulbright is. They're like the largest academic institution in the world. They get like $1 billion a year from the US government to give people scholarships. They contacted me, and then I founded the Fulbright Entrepreneurship Initiative with Fulbright and a few other people, which was like amazing. And then now it's going into universities to give grants away to founders who start businesses that are in environmental sustainability and inclusion items, which is like my whole like world or what I really care about. And I'm in my fantasy now doing this. It's freaking amazing. It'll do things for you. It has 180,000 investors they can find. It's got like, it does your Tam Sam Som. There's grants in there. Like it's basically the whole startup ecosystem one place. Mm-hmm. And then we just give it away, and then founders can come through. And that's how I'm trying to help now. Because I think that you have to change the world at the roots. You know, things rot from the roots and they grow from the roots. And, you know, what we're experiencing now with a lot of discrimination, a lot of marginalized people and environmental issues and stuff, we have to start that from the seed. And that is the founders. They change the future. Mm-hmm. Like think back before, if you remember, all the richest people in the world were like oil tycoons and sheiks and stuff. And now they're entrepreneurs.
Yep.
Right. And everything that we see changing in the world is coming from entrepreneurs, you know, not from, you know, some old company or some, you know, old rich turd, you know? So it's like, that's where I want to contribute. And that's what I do now. And I'm sorry I talked so long.
No, are you kidding me? I love all of it. That's actually how we got connected was, I think, the Phillies Startup Leaders Founder Group was using your platform. And I think that's how we got connected, because I'm really in with those folks, which is a great organization, by the way. If anybody's in Philadelphia, they should be part of
Amazing
Startup Leaders. Just Isabel over there is ridiculously fantastic.
Isabel is the bee's knees.
Oh my God. I got to spend time with her yesterday. She is like, I mean, just seeing her in motion is like unreal. Like she's a wizard.
I love her. And I can't wait to come out there, and I hope I see you.
Yes, I can't. Please, man, you got to tell me when you're coming. I will be wherever you are. I promise. So the first thing that kind of comes to mind, though, is like, how the hell do you keep all this stuff organized? I mean, you got a million tracks of things going on. Do you just have like a giant calendar? Do you like have a to-do list? Like, what the hell do you do to keep all this stuff somewhat, you know, sane?
I do. I'm hyper. So when you have autism and you have all these things, you have to rely on other tools, like if you're somebody that has one leg, you have a wheelchair. and so on and so forth, right? So I have all these things. So I have software that reads to me. I have software that types when I talk. I have all kinds of little algorithms running on inside of different products, you know, that I have what I call routines, and then I have routines separated out into different types. And so basically what I've learned is if you look next to me, there's a picture of Einstein. And one thing that Einstein, he was also autistic. And one of the things that Einstein said was that you shouldn't be remembering things that you could keep somewhere else. Right. You should maintain your brain for the things that are active now. So I store everything. I use Apple Reminders like crazy. I have a lot of spreadsheets that Apple Reminders attaches to. So I can just, something pops up, I click on the link in there, it goes to a spreadsheet. I use, you know, for work, I also use the HubSpot CRM. I have a notes section, and these little tools, they keep me operating all the time. And I don't have to spend a lot of time trying to figure out what I should be doing. Mm-hmm. I spend time setting up my programs, my algorithms, so I know what I should be doing. It's like, you know, if you're going to chop down a tree, you spend 50% of your time sharpening your saw. Mm-hmm. So that, so that's what I do. I spend a lot of time creating processes and algorithms and reminders and things like that that tell me what I need to do and when I need to do them. And I do it at the point, right, at that time. And, you know, I text myself things, I email myself things. And the combination of mainly the reminders with links to Google Sheets and email and text is that, and my calendar, obviously, is my system. So like at any one time, like right now, I finished the book, Startup Science of the Life Cycle, and now I've got a 5-book deal. So I'm writing one on funding and capital and one on innovation. I'm doing 2 books at the same time. I have a bunch of investment companies. 2 of them are selling right now. 1 of them is doing a round. 2 of them are doing a round that I'm doing that I'm the lead investor on. And I run Startup Science, and I'm part of the Fulbright Initiative. I have a Forbes radio show. I'm on these podcasts a lot of days, and I'm training to ride up a 14,000-foot mountain on a bicycle. So that is like, and I have, you know, 3 kids and, you know, a pig. And the pig is like, we have a dog too, but she's like a dog. And that's like my, you know, that's how I, you know, that's the maintenance, right? But on top of that, I have all these processes. I get up at 5:30, I do yoga, I meditate 3 times a day. You know, I train in the morning, and then I do yoga again in the afternoon, again in the evening, and meditate each time. Mm-hmm. I have a specific eating regimen. Everything is planned out. A lot of people don't like to live that way, but I can't live another way. Mm. It makes me very nervous.
I mean, I think people want to live that way, but they can't to some degree, right? Like they want some like predictability and foresight and, you know, some sort of process and methodology. And I struggle with that. Like I've been successful, but I've been successful on the fly. So it's like, I struggle to really like, you know, a to-do list is like my best friend and my worst enemy. Like, I think I'm going to use them and I think they're going to be great. And I've used 50 different tools and I have a team, thank God, that, you know, does most of the wrangling of me. But, you know, if left up to my own devices, I struggle with that. So I think a lot of people, especially entrepreneurs, would love to be more rigid with their organization because it's easy to say it, but then like life gets in the way, like all the things you just mentioned, like most people just get like so sidetracked that they can't even do, you know, 1% of the things you just said. Is there a day of the week that you sit down and kind of calibrate what's coming, or is it just everything is kind of in motion?
I do it the day before. So at the end of every day, I do a decompression, and then the next day I do a retrospective and a decompression.
Wow!
At the end of every day. And then I get ready at the beginning of the new day. That's what meditation does. It gets my mindset right. But like, basically I'll just tell you like how this, so I have in my reminders, I have a list of annual things. And then in there I have reoccurring things. So giving blood every 8 weeks is a reoccurring thing. It just tells me, here's what you need to do. Here's the place, location, here's their phone number, here's their hours, everything's right there, right? Then I have monthly. So I moved things from annually into monthly. And then I moved things from monthly into weekly, and I moved things from weekly into that day. And then I have next up. And then I have a general list for just stuff that I'm going to slam in that I need to remember. And I go through that at the end of the day and put it in one of the other lists and schedule it. So the thing automatically moves everything through.
Mm-hmm.
So I have and one of my annual ones, as an example, is my life list. And my life list has all of the challenges I want to do, all of the places I want to go. You know, it takes time to do this, but you can do it on airplanes or whatever, like watching TV even, you know, and it's right. fun. And then I choose things from those things, put it on my annual list, and then move it through so that, you know, like right now I'm training for this cycle climb. It's the fourth hardest cycle climb in the world. And I have asthma, right? So this is really hard for me.
Mm-hmm.
And so now every day I have something that I need to do in the morning and something I need to do at night to get ready. And it ramps up over time. That putting together that whole schedule may take me an hour, but now it's good for the whole year.
Right.
So, you know, you just, on my birthday every year, I sit down, I take the entire day and I plan out everything. And then at the end of the day, I'm done. I feel this great feel of relief. And then I just follow what it's telling me. It's like having a secretary or like an assistant.
Right.
I don't know if you could say secretary anymore.
I don't know if it's politically correct, but.
Yeah, I don't know what, you know what I mean? Like you have an assistant.
I think you can say it because it's not, I think it's still a job function.
Gender, it's not
gender.
Yeah,
it's not gender specific. It's like saying flight attendant. Like you assume that it's probably a female, but there are, you know, male.
Well, I'm sorry if anybody.
No, I don't think anybody's going to take offense to that. But if they do, we apologize profusely.
Yeah.
I love the birthday thing. That's a great, dude. I feel like maybe you can be my life coach. I feel like I'm like learning so much just for my own personal self. I don't really.
Dude, I would love to show you. Yeah, I would love to show you what I do. Because think about like this, right? People do New Year's. Well, New Year's is an arbitrary thing. Your birthday is your new year.
Right.
So yeah. I do it on my birthday.
I love it.
I have to be done by my birthday. I have to decide the next year by my birthday. And then the whole year is to achieve things. So the next birthday, I look at my list and I'm like, fucking, I crushed it this year.
Right. Well, what do you do if things don't work out, if things don't get finished, if things, you know, one of your big ticket items, something happens and you couldn't do it. Has that happened? And then what do you do kind of to course correct from that?
So just like when you're doing a startup, right? Like people are always like pivots and all this kind of stuff, right? There's iterations, which are slight adjustments, and then there's pivots, which are turns, right? So like the way I do it is that if something isn't working, like I'll give you an example. Like when I was 19, I started bodybuilding because I wanted to not get beat up anymore. And I ended up competing in the nationals and everything. And I haven't done it until I was 50. And I did a 550 pound deadlift 5 times for my 50th birthday. And so now this year I was going to train and I was going to do bodybuilding again, right? I did the fast and I was like, okay, I'm going to do bodybuilding, but I couldn't do it because my shoulders jacked up. So I just changed. I just said, I go back to the list and I'm like, okay, what are the other things I can choose from? In business, it's a little different because in business, every failure is progress. I mean, if you think about it, like athletes, they work out until failure, right? And everything that is strong does it through struggle. Plants grow cell by cell and bust through concrete and they're stronger. Evolution only occurs at failure, right? Things fail and they evolve. So for us to live and think that we should be living without struggle means that you're truly not living up to your potential because you should be struggling all the time. If you're struggling all the time, then you are moving forward. Even if you fail, it's part of the process. Like, I tell people, like entrepreneurs all the time, they're like, well, I failed. And I'm like, oh man, did you learn? Oh, awesome. Well, congratulations. You know, like that's, you achieved failure, which is a form of achievement.
Right.
So when I am doing something and I get to failure, I'm like, fuck, right on. Sorry, I said that word. I'm not supposed to say
that word. You can say that word. You can say whatever word you want. It's like we're in the woods out here. You can say whatever.
Okay. So I would just like, do things to failure, and then I would fail and I'd be like, man, I am glad I learned that. The trick is to fail fast. You know, like if you think you're gonna bomb, then do it and get and move on.
Right.
You know, don't like try to hold on to something that isn't like some shit that's not going to like work out. A lot of people do that with relationships. A lot of people do that with things that they do in life and jobs and businesses and everything. It's like, no, man, as soon as you realize that, be honest with yourself and move on.
Mm-hmm. I could not agree more. Where do you get your list, your challenge list, your inspiration? Like, do you just see something and you're like, I want to do that? Or like, is there just this immense backlog that you're never going to work through because you have so many things?
There's an immense backlog. There's like 380 things on the list. And one of them is like saving a life, right? And when Ukraine happened, I was trying to get out there so I could save a life. And then when Israel happened, I was trying to get out there so I could save a life.
That's going to be going for a while. You might have a chance to get out there and do that if that's what you want to do. I don't know if you come back though. It's scary over there right now.
Yeah. But I just have this huge list and I watch a lot of documentaries. I don't like to watch things unless I'm learning from them, except for like Star Trek and Rick and Morty and stuff. I'll watch that. But I don't like to watch things that are just like unnecessary information.
Right.
So I watch documentaries and I get a lot of stuff from documentaries. You know, I'll watch something, I'll be like, just a little flash or something, I'll be like, ooh, that's cool.
Right.
I want to try that, you know, and then I add it to the list.
What's your favorite, most recent documentary you've watched?
It's a documentary series. My favorite all time one is Through the Wormhole with Morgan Freeman. Because I love physics.
Yeah.
And but it's not just physics. It's all kinds of stuff. It's amazing. I love it. But then I watched this one called The Human Play or something like that. And it's all these people that do like how humans play and all these really bizarre things like, you know, wrestling in Africa and all kinds of crazy stuff. And I got a lot of ideas from that.
Well, that was the one with the cliff diver on the trailer, I think, right? Like the guys that jump off, the guys from like some third world country, they like jump off a cliff as like their way to have fun, I think.
Yeah, I have that on my list. I tried to do it actually this year, but I couldn't because the tide has to be in a certain place for you to jump in.
Well, and if the climate keeps going that way, you'll be able to jump probably from your house.
Yeah.
The water keeps rising the way it is. So what, you know, ridiculous, just like the inspiration level from somebody that, you know, talks to you, I'm sure is ridiculously high. How are you going through your day to day and, you know, how do you disseminate that inspiration? Is it through your founder work? Is it through books? Is it through talking to other people like on a day-to-day basis? Is it through your kids? Like, what is it that you're like, how are you getting out that ridiculous level of like drive and determination? Because that is a really cool thing a lot of people don't have. Like, how are you helping other people with that?
Well, thank you, first of all. Like, you've said so many really nice things to me, and I really want you to know that I appreciate it and gratitude. Jay, that's cool.
You're probably the coolest guy I've met in a very long time. So I do mean all of it.
Thanks, man. Well, one thing I did is when I did the TED talk, I forgot to talk about that, but I did a TED talk on, it's called Thriving with Autism. And when I did that, it was a big deal for me because it was the first time I ever talked about autism openly. And it was scary because I thought everybody, like, it was coming out, you know, and I thought everybody was going to be like, this guy's, you know, and I was going to have the same kind of stuff that they used to do when I was little. Mm-hmm. It turned out the opposite, but I didn't know that at the time, but I did that. And then sometimes, like, you know, I try to speak at universities and I, you know, do these 1 minute mentor things on YouTube, and I post a lot of content and I really try to. And I do a lot of podcasts. I do like one of these every day. I've done like 100 and I don't even know how many.
Wow.
And I try to get to talk about it because I really feel like I know for a fact that, you know, people are more capable than they think they are because like we all have the same hardware. It's just different software. And that means that if I can do it, then that means anybody can do it. I mean, I have asthma, man. I swam a marathon, you know, I have autism and dyslexia. I wrote a book, right? Like, I mean, I dictated a book to a writer, but still, you know, it's my handicap, right? So everybody can, you can do things that you think you can't do. You really can. And I know it sounds cliche and like, you know, and this isn't like some Tony Robbins bullshit, right? This is like, you can actually do these things. It takes a methodical process. It does. And it takes what I call a handful of things, like five fingers in your hand, focus, drive, enthusiasm, discipline, and optimism. And because if you can't do anything, if you can't focus, you have to be able to get yourself to focus. But if you can't, then you use discipline and then you have drive. And drive is trying to go somewhere, wanting to do something and feeling that the outcome of whatever it is when you get there is worth the process. Mm-hmm. And the way that I do that is by thinking the process is the destination. Like training for something is the fun. The doing it at the end is just dessert. But the meal is doing it the whole time because you feel better all the time and, you know, all that stuff. So that's focus and drive. And then enthusiasm is, first of all, enthusiasm is contagious. And you have to be enthusiastic about things to get yourself excited and to get people excited around you. So you have to pull some enthusiasm. That's focus, drive, enthusiasm. Discipline is like the linchpin. Like when you, like this morning, you know, I got up, I'm like, I smoked a little too much weed last night and I had to get up at 5:30 and I was like, fuck, you know? And then I, you know, cause I was going to go do a cycle and train and I just deployed discipline. It's like this other person that you just kind of kicks you out of bed and says, you know, just go do it once you're there, you know? And then optimism. And optimism is the biology of hope, right? The concept of optimism to me is the idea that you can, that you are optimistic about the outcome. You're not thinking you're going to fail. You're thinking you're going to achieve. Even if you fail, you're still going to achieve. So the handful, focus, drive, enthusiasm, and discipline and optimism is to me, that's like the ingredients.
Right.
You master those and then you deploy them like tools. Mm. Like you need a screwdriver, you need a wrench. Whatever you need, you know, sometimes it's a hammer. Discipline is usually the hammer.
Discipline usually is a hammer. As somebody with five kids, it's usually a hammer. The hammer like bounces. It's like a rubber mallet though for my kids more than a hammer because it doesn't really work. All of that. I love all five of those, by the way. And I totally agree with everything you just said. How I think personal discipline is easier than business discipline as an entrepreneur. And I don't know why, and maybe it's just me, but, you know, to get up at 5 a.m. and to work out and to do the things, I'm kind of on the same kick as you. I've got the little, you know, the guy on my shoulder says, get out of bed, go do what you got to do. It's going to suck. My flight instructor told me one time this story about this guy who ran a mile every day and like he broke his leg and he was still running the mile and like blah, blah. And like the guy sits down and asks him, he's like, how do you, you know, do this every day? He's like, I put my feet on the floor. He's like, I get up every day. It's like, I just put my feet on the floor. And he's like, so I think about that just about every day. I'm like, just put my feet on the floor. If I put my feet on the floor, I'll get up and finish the rest of the day. But, you know, I sometimes struggle with maintaining that focus or the discipline or the, you know, the different things in business. Do you have that? Have you seen that? Is there a difference between the kind of personal accountability and versus being an entrepreneur where you have all this freedom to do everything and you can do anything and there's a million things that you have to do? How the hell do people stay focused? And is that something you've kind of seen people struggle with compared to their personal life?
Yeah, totally. I mean, most entrepreneurs have the attention span of a fruit fly.
Yeah.
So, you know, you tend to bounce around. And the other thing is that most entrepreneurs do what they want to do, not necessarily what they should be doing.
Right.
So what I do is I have an achievement stack. Okay. So the achievement stack is you have a mission. Something you want to achieve. So I want to do this by X so that I can do this. So it's like a customer user story. I want to do this by this date so I can do this,
right,
or have whatever outcome it is, right? Then it's that simple, right? And then underneath the mission is I call it a modem. So the objectives. So what are the objectives that I need to achieve in order to make that mission happen? And then underneath the objectives are the tasks. So this is like the roll up your sleeves and actually do the task. And then measurement is the last one. So that's the modem.
Mm-hmm.
And what I do is I start out and I have different missions for different things. I have personal missions, family missions, physical missions, health missions, so on and so forth. And then I have the objectives. What is the objective of accomplishing this mission? And then the task, what are the steps I need to achieve it? And I focus on the tasks. So like a lot of times in business, people focus on their financials. And this will make sense. I bounce around because I think dimensionally, but this will make sense in a minute. Just bear with me. A lot of people focus their business on their financials, and investors focus their business on financials. But your financials started 6 months ago. And so looking at your financials when you're building a business is like driving down the freeway looking at your rearview mirror. So you have to pay attention to what creates the financials. And those are the leading indicators, the things that create those. So it's sort of like people go to the gym, go and they get on the scale and they're like, oh my God, I put on 5 pounds. And then they think, oh, but it's already too late. You already have the 5 pounds. So you have to think now, you have to say, okay, if I want to lose 5 pounds, I have to change something at a tactical level in my day-to-day life. Like don't eat, get exercise, whatever it is. Like maybe stop drinking Coke every day or something, right? And then that one change ripples all the way up to the mission, to achieving the mission. So in business, I do the same thing. So like, you know, like right now today, I'm writing this book, Funding and Capital, to try, because founders don't understand. This is something that I really need to make sure people understand, like funding and capital, how it all works. So I don't write, like, I don't sit down and go, I'm going to write the whole book. I decide I'm going to write a table of contents, and I'm going to write the individual chapters, and I just work on it a little bit every day. I don't try to bust it out. I don't do like massive amounts at one time. I just do a little bit every day. The last one took me 3 years, you know, and that is how you achieve missions. So on a daily basis, as a founder, you got to sit there and you got to say at the beginning of the month, what do I want to achieve and by what date and what is that going to mean for me? And then you have to say, okay, in order to achieve that, I have to have these objectives. So one big mission, and maybe like, I always tell people don't do more than 5 objectives. Typically you do 3, and then you don't do more than 10 tasks. And if you achieve those tasks, you achieve the objective. If you achieve the objective, you achieve the mission. And it's an easy way to ladder up and down, right? And that's how I do it. And I always tell myself, it's not like, you know, founders think they're free and you can do whatever you want, but that's bullshit. You have to do what you need to be doing, not what you want to be doing.
Right.
And you don't need to do everything on your list. You just need to do the things that are the most important things, mm-hmm. right? And every day you have to choose what are the most important things. And then you have to just stay focused on those things. And if one of those things is something you don't want to do, the way I handle that is I have a 3-time rule. If I have something on my list 3 times, it's the first thing I do. So instead of like keep procrastinating on something, like, right. you know, some giant report or some deck for a board meeting or something, you know, like, right. I'm like, oh, fuck, I'd rather like, I would rather like walk on glass than do these things. So right. I'm like, okay, it's the first thing I'm going to do. Just get it over with and I'll feel happy when it's over.
Right. No, I love that. That's great advice too. Who were some of your first customers? I mean, you've had so many different businesses, but who were kind of your memorable first customers of some of those businesses?
Oh man, the bungee jumping company, we had Mountain Dew. We did Mountain Dew commercials.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, and we jumped a GMC Jimmy truck off a bridge one time. It didn't have anything in it. It was like a frame, but it was for a commercial, and that was fun. And then a bunch of like rock stars like Motley Crue and stuff. And then I think in banking, when I was doing banking, I had this old guy who was in Vietnam and he got Agent Orange poisoning, and it was really, really rough life for this guy. And so I did the whole loan for him for free and, you know, restructured everything. It was really cool. I helped him a lot. That was really meaningful to me. I'll never forget him. And then in biotechnology, we had all the franchise restaurants because of the grease that they put into the system, hydrocarbons. And my business used bacteria to eat up hydrocarbons, an innocuous process that produces oxygen and water. So instead of using chemicals, which are toxic, it was a little before the time before we became all green and everybody was like, you know, didn't believe it and everything, but it worked eventually. And that business, we had a few really large wastewater treatment plants that we were getting rid of. They were going to have to build a whole new treatment plant, and then they didn't have to build it and it reduced the amount of emissions that were leaving the wastewater treatment plant going into the ocean and other waterways by 80%. And that was pretty rewarding. And then, you know, in the performance marketing business, we had like every major brand, you know, Guess, Skechers, I mean, anything you'd see at a mall, we had them all. And they were not very cool, though. They were not cool at all. So, but, you know, in terms of like, out of everything I've done, what I'm doing now, like helping founders succeed, like really trying to help founders, I'm really seriously dedicated. This is like my last hurrah. And it is the most rewarding thing I've ever done. Because, you know, like I'm getting to talk to you and all the people that are listening, and I get to talk to founders and universities, and I get to go into the system and look at the data, and I could see these people achieving things. I can see them not making the mistakes that I studied. And I know that they're going to be better off because of that. And I can see their businesses moving, and I can see them solving problems. And I can tell you that is the most rewarding thing I've ever done by far. And I'm super friggin' pumped about it. Sorry, I went a little crazy.
No, I loved it. That was an incredible customer list. Well, I usually have a question that I ask everybody. It's kind of the mystery question, but it's not going to be fitting for you because the question is, if you could do anything on earth and you knew you couldn't fail, what would it be? But you do that like multiple times a year. So that's not exactly a fit for you. But if you have anything for that, my alternative question to that will be, what is your most anticipated or the thing you want to do the most on your big life list, your backlog of 300 plus items? What's number one?
Going to space.
And you get to do it. When does that happen, by the way?
I have a ticket. Do you want me to get it and show it to you?
Yes, please. Show me the ticket. I have to see your ticket. Hold on one second. Are you kidding me?
It's so cool. It's so cool. So this is my ticket.
Wow. Holy shit. Look at that. Official reservation.
Yeah.
So it takes off from the Grand Canyon? Is that where you leave from?
Yeah, you can choose where it takes off. Mine leaves from the Grand Canyon. I was going to do the Aurora Borealis, but I would have had to wait another year.
Okay.
And I'm passenger 617, you can see.
Yeah. Wow.
That means 617 people would have gone before me.
So they can work out the kinks before you go up.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I hope so. I think if I could do anything and not fail, I would probably be the president.
Wow. That's the first time anybody said that.
Yeah, because I think that there are some standards that we need to fix, regardless of whatever party you believe in. Like, I think everybody agrees that people shouldn't be allowed to lie if you're in public service.
Right.
Teachers, cops, politicians, like nobody should be able to just flat out lie to people when they're being paid by the people they're lying to.
Right.
I feel like that is the most stupidest, illogical outcome of a public service that you could possibly think of.
Right.
I don't care who it is, right? If you lie in a court of law, you go to jail. If you lie in your public service, you go to jail, period.
Right. Right now you get promoted. You get promoted right now if you lie in public office. All right, Greg, I feel I could literally talk to you for probably all day. Where can people find more about Startup Science, more about you? Where do people go?
GregorySheppard.com. So GregorySheppard.com. And there's like so much in there. Like, I really, like, if you're listening, like, I'm trying to help you. Like, I really sincerely am trying to help you. So go there, and there's a tab called Visionaries on that website. If you click on that, you can get into the platform for free. And there's corporates looking to fund companies in there. There's 180,000 investors. We've got like grants in there. I mean, you know, like it's free, man. Like you guys should go in there and like take advantage of it, because it was not free for me to make it. It's my way of giving back to people because I feel, I'm an optimist, but I feel that in the subatomic particles that we are made of, that we are inherently good. I don't see animals and things in nature randomly creating suffering and torture and hurting people and doing things that are bad for their own backyard. And I think that is our inherent nature. and that we are skewed by things. And I think that if people go in there, they can actually change things. Entrepreneurs create the future. So let me help you, please go in there, and it's free. You know, I mean, I've worked really hard for this. So, you know, and then also, like, I think that for people to know too, that Startup Science, if there's an accelerator, or if you're working in incubator or something like that, you know, whatever, tell them to go to Startup Science, because those platforms we private label for different places. You know, I mean, we have Harvard, Stanford, MIT, Columbia. You know, these are school. What's, you want to hear what's funny, Jay?
Yes.
There's no way I could get into any of these places, but they're teaching my stuff. Because when I was little, everybody called me retard and stuff. And now those schools have my stuff. And it's so funny because I could never even get into those schools.
Ugh, man, to say you're an inspiration is downplaying it, my friend. I think the world needs more people like you. I hope people check you out. I will link your stuff all over the place. I'm in the startup ecosystem here in Philly, which I will be, you know, sharing out your stuff with everybody. And I hope everybody uses it. And I hope everybody buys your books and just learns from you, because you've got a lot of knowledge to share. And I feel very fortunate to have gotten some of your time today. And I'm probably going to be a better person after talking to you today, Greg. So thank you very much for your time, and talk to you again soon. Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks, Greg.